Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Buzz Studio W, your global radio network. We service things 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with the finest in broadcasting anywhere found around the world. And now it's time for Teens Talk Truth with your hosts, AJ and Alex, and they have a special guest on today. I know this young lady well, and that's Dr. Charlotta Barringer Brown. Hey, Dr. Brown, welcome to the set.
Greetings. How are you doing? How are you all doing today?
Everyone's doing fine. Want to toss it over to AJ and Alex. I'm sure they're excited to have you on. It's going to be a fun show.
All right. Thank you much. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Teens Talk Truth radio show, where we discuss hot topics affecting teens in our society today. We hope you all had a great start to your weekend. But before we get to the topic, I'm going to give a shout out to Positive Teens in the News. And this one is brought to you by the Good News Network.
Indian teen invents a gadget to transform. Indian teen invents gadgets to transform dementia care out of concern for his grandmother. An Indian teen who is a self-confessed nerd who loves robotics also loved his grandmother. Whose name I can't pronounce. Together, they led him to create a new invention that could greatly improve care for Alzheimer's patients. Himesh was 12 years old when one summer evening in 2018, he observed his grandmother go to the kitchen to make tea for herself. When she exited the room, he had left the gas on. It shocked Himesh, but also drove him to convert the hours spent on YouTube learning about robotics into a solution that would help ensure accidents like this could be detected if he weren't there. A question he found himself asking several times. His grandmother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's the year before, and in 2023 passed away from the debilitating. It's still not delibating.
D-E-L-I-B-A-T-I-N-G. That's what.
Yeah, delibating. I said that.
Whatever.
Well, they misspelled it. It should be debilitating.
Told you. Anyway.
They misspelled that word.
It's awful.
What do you mean?
D-E-L-I-B-A-T-I-N-G.
Yeah.
And I
don't
know no
delibating.
So
yeah.
I'm like
debilitating. Yeah. That's what it is. Yes. No, right. You wrote that article. It's not y'all's fault. That's the people doing the article.
It's debilitating.
What happened was, guys, anyway, for the debilitating neurodegenerative disease. By then, Himesh had invented the Alpha Monitor, a badge-like monitoring device that sends out alerts if the person wearing it wanders off or falls.
Oh, so like a different life alert, though. Because isn't that what life alert does? Is like if you fall, and then or is that like, yeah, you call people when you push the button.
Right.
Life Alert deals with falls and illness and that type of stuff. This thing seems to deal with other types of issues.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder how that works though. It's like, does it like track like what you're doing or what you've done the day? And then like, if you, cause like in the example, it was like, she left the gas on. Like, how's it going to know you left? Or like, how's it gonna know you left the gas on or something like that? That's my question.
That was an ingenious design. How he came up with something like that is interesting.
Very, very
good job, Himesh.
Indeed. All right, now it's everybody's favorite segment, the What Had Happened Was. This one is just straight up interesting. From Vice News. There we go.
Scientists finally found out what a monkey mermaid mummy really is.
Never heard of that.
For decades, a small blackened mummy has been a source of mystery for priests at a Japanese temple. The creature, which looks like a monkey-mermaid hybrid, has been kept in southern Japan's Injun Temple. But in 838 CE, it has fuzz on its head, teeth, and five fingers on each hand, that eerily cup its face as though mid-screen.
Like, what? Okay.
scales run down its back. So you got that's okay. No one knew what the mummy was or how it got to Injuan Temple in Okayama Prefecture. For generations of worshippers, the 30-centimeter long body was an unperturbed, quirky part of the temple until last year.
So is it a statue?
No, it's an actual dead monkey.
Oh, and it's got a... It's actually disgusting. It's got a whole tail. Like, look at... Like,
monkeys have tails, dude.
Not all of them, but, like, where's his feet at, though? I see the hands.
Don't worry about the feet.
That's nasty. Actually looks gross. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, y'all can't see it, but it's ugly.
Be glad you can't see it.
Intrigued by the mummy, researchers at the Kurashiki University of Science and the Arts in Okayama Prefecture set out to determine what animals kept under these mummified wraps. Hmm. Findings of their year-long search were announced last week. The mummy wasn't an animal; it was merely an object. Never mind.
Thank you. I'm gonna say there's no way anything like this can ever exist. Like they literally made themselves extinct if they actually did it. It's like there's no way. If I looked like that, boy,
so
I'd be
they
gone.
Just made up something, wrapped it up.
Yeah,
like
a statue.
300-500 years that people will wonder.
Right. I wonder if we could freak people out in the future.
Right. Laugh out of it in the afterlife.
Where would you keep that though? Like that's nasty. I wouldn't put that on display. Like that's not even a family heirloom.
You
keep
need to
that's
leave
gross.
Instructions for something like that.
Nah, leave that in the box. Don't float that boy down the river. Like that's nasty. All right, but introduce our guest, Dr. Charletta Behringer Pratt.
Greetings. Thank you all for inviting me. I truly appreciate it. I always love the opportunity to speak with you all and your audience.
Oh, thank you. We love having you.
Dr. Charletta Behringer Brown received her BA in psychology from the Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia, an MED in special education from Virginia State University in Petersburg, Virginia, an ED in Administration and Supervision of Special Education for Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University, Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia, and a PhD in Public Policy and Administration with a concentration in law from Walden University in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Awesome. Got all the D's in there.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you all.
I didn't even know there were that many degrees with a D in it.
Mm-hmm. M-E-D, E-D-D.
Yeah. Well, M-E-D is a Master of Education, which is a distinction from an M-A, which is, say, for instance, I was already certified to teach a topic, which was psychology when I got a Master's of Education. You don't have those many who have a Master's of Education because they normally will get the introduction, which is an M-A or an M-S. So there's even a distinction with master's degrees and doctoral degrees, meaning that an EDD, that I have a doctorate of education, is different from a PhD. The EDD does not have as much research component as a PhD, meaning that you take maybe 6 or 9 hours of research courses, basics, in a EDD, which is a doctorate of education, and a PhD has up to 18 to 24 hours of research, meaning that you are research intensive in addition to your major.
That's interesting. That's interesting. That sounds like a lot of extra years of college though.
It does. Glad they're behind me. Not at all.
Amen.
Okay, all right. So today we're going to be talking about the school system.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So my first question is, how has the school system changed over the years? Because I know it was, they required different things at different times.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you, and you all are teenagers, and it's not an insult on anyone's generation. But you all have access to more information today than that anyone could imagine. But the way that it is translated is provided to you in such a way that you're like, okay, there's 100 things out here. Which way do I go? Meaning that when I was literally or approximately your age, someone would literally hand me a book and say, go read how to do it. Mm. Now you can go to the internet and someone has already done it for you. And they may have 1,000 examples of how they did it. And it's up to you to figure out, well, which is the right one? Because everybody's saying they're an expert, but are they really? So you have more information at your disposal than we did, but it's false, like they say, fake news. Mm-hmm. It's not correct. Mm-hmm. And so when, say, for instance, you go to read an article or you try to understand what a research article or even a reading is, like, you know how, like, say, for instance, you may not read the newspaper, like a physical newspaper. Mm-hmm. You may get, like, you got your stories off your phone or your computer. Yes, well, some person who is a third party wrote it. You don't know it to be truth or not. And most of the time when you read it, you're like, who wrote this? Because mm-hmm. the English grammar, whatever you say, is so off the mark. You're like, this looked like somebody wrote this in the third grade. Mm-hmm. And you look at it and you say, well, I write better than this because we don't have experts that are writing it. You could write an article right now and post it and say, this is this. But you have parents who are professionals, so at least you have a better foundation maybe the average person would have. Schools have been, quote, for a lack of a better way to say it, dummied down. And it's not, I'm putting it in a very simple way to say it, but people in generations prior to you actually had a better foundation of education than what you have today. Wow. The reason is because it's gotten so simplified. Asking, like, say for instance, you may have other things in play where, like, a state mm-hmm. that currently says, oh, you know, you basically are getting a certificate of attendance. We're good with that. And that's mm-hmm. for all students, meaning no rigor, meaning no hard classes, no AP classes, no honors classes. You don't really need to take any of that. We'll go ahead and give you your certificate of attendance, but we won't call it that. We'll call it a regular high school diploma. So if you were in that particular state, I think it's Oregon, truthfully. It may be Oregon or another state, but they basically have put it in such a way that as long as you attended school, you're good. You're good.
You telling me I just
put that up against someone else. And I give you an example, even the Commonwealth of Virginia where I am. We used to be within the top 5, top 10 in the nation. We're now in the bottom 50. Damn. Why do you think that is? What are some of your suggestions as to why do you think we've fallen that low just in the state that I'm in?
Wow.
And you can look it up as fact. It is true fact. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you another example of that. When I was studying to be a teacher, meaning undergraduate to graduate, okay? Mm-hmm. Meaning I went straight, you know, K through 12, then right. went straight into college, had no gaps in schooling. Mm-hmm. So think about your average ages. You know, you graduate from high school and you go straight into college. Okay. Right. So you think about, I was in my early 20s earning my, you know, early 20s finishing, you know, finished my bachelor's and then going mm-hmm. into a master's. Okay. Right. And so I remember doing an internship at what we have in Virginia is called the Virginia Department of Education, an internship. Mm-hmm. And I remember the superintendent of schools for the state. He was in a meeting and I just happened to be taking notes in this meeting, this, you know, big, large meeting with all these officials there. Mm-hmm. And somebody said something to him about the state that had the highest cutoff scores for praxis, meaning the tests that you have to take to become a teacher in addition to your degrees. Mm-hmm. And so the superintendent at that time said, well, who has the highest, you know, who has the highest cutoff score? I mean, he was angry. He said, who has the highest cutoff scores? And somebody said, oh, so-and-so, you know, whatever state had the highest cutoff score. And they mm-hmm. may have been maybe 2 points above Virginia. Mm. Without rhyme or reason. He said, oh, we can do better than that. I wanted 5 points higher than whoever the highest is. Mm. No rhyme or reason. No research on it. No studying on it. He wanted it 5 points higher. So at the time I graduated and finished with my credentials to become a teacher in the 1990s, Virginia was the tops in the nation for passing scores and passing rates for justice teachers. Mm-hmm. Meaning they wanted the best and the brightest is what they basically were implying. Okay. Mm-hmm. You want the best and the brightest. We've gone those 27, 28 years since I was a teacher. I mean, since I was a classroom teacher. Now mm-hmm. we're in the bottom rung of the 50 states. Mm-hmm. Of the 50 states. Mm-hmm. So when I tell people about how far education has dropped down, that's where we are. Like I said, Virginia used to be tops. Now we're in the bottom rung. But a lot of that people don't want to speak to the fact is the fact we've got so many people coming from other countries into mm-hmm. Virginia because it is close to what? The nation's capital. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one better. When I was supervising teachers in the field, when I was doing internships supervising teachers and principals in the field, when Trump was inaugurated, one of my students called and told me she was in Northern Virginia, which again mm-hmm. is close to DC. She called and told me, Dr. Barringer Brown, you don't need to come observe me this week. And I was like, you know, what's going on? What you mean? You know, I don't need to come and observe, you know, and see what you're doing in the classroom. She said, I don't have any students. Damn. I said, what do you mean you don't have any students? I spoke to the principal. She said, no, ma'am, she doesn't have any students because the people who are here that are truthfully illegals and others are scared to send their school kids today because Trump had been inaugurated. For those classrooms, maybe out of a class of 27 students, maybe 10 of them showed up that were actual United States citizens. The others were all illegals. That thus, if you don't have anyone at home providing you with the proper supports to have the English translated at home to help you do your homework, you think you're going to pass when you get back to school? Mm-hmm. That's what's happened across the United States. Texas has been affected. Virginia has been affected. California has been affected. Think about every state that you have high populations of illegals coming to the country. Their scores have plummeted, And it's not something ugly that I'm saying, but it is reality and people do not want to discuss it.
Mm-hmm. Well, aside from that, you talked about how different things are from when, say, I was in school versus yes. my kids. I know my husband and I, when we look at their homework, it's like, okay, are you playing a game or is this, and because I can't really tell when it's on the computer, and I know that it's a great idea to make homework fun.
Right.
Because kids are more likely to do it.
Right.
But it's hard to know if you're actually doing schoolwork or if you are, you know, blowing it off and just playing a video game at the time.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, technology has come into play at so many levels that there is no crossover between is it real instruction or is it something to pacify the time? And that's what's happened, especially after COVID, with people doing more online work, more online settings. It's not the hands-on instruction that you, as you state, you would have normally have gotten 10 to 15, even 20 years ago. It's not as hands-on intensive. So therefore, we have students who are also falling between the cracks, don't have access to the technology at home. So there are a lot of things in the play as to why the education overall has declined, be it the school, be it the home life, be it the access to technology, also the hands-on instruction, not having the crossover when you get home, parents not having the time. I have parents that have come to me, I mean, even now, and they tell me, they say, well, you know, I'm working 50 and 60 hours, and it's so difficult for me just to sit down and put a meal on the table or you know, I'm having to get fast food because I don't even have the time to devote to that. So it's a lot of things that are in our schedules now that were not present 10, 15, 20 years ago that also lends itself to the educational process, even diet. And I say that even diet with that, even the rates of obesity, I tell people don't understand that when you go to school either hungry or overfed, you cannot concentrate, thus you don't learn at the same rate.
You know, you mentioned a lot of what's changed in terms of the type of instructions. there are things that I truly do get need, you know, to be improved, when we're educating in the 2000s. But things like, you know, the way math is done. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are just some things that are just completely different. Some people call it Singapore math.
Yes.
There are different names for it.
I don't know if the young men have seen as well that when you have a math problem and the way that you've come up with the formula, and there are several different ways that you can go about it, and you could be downgraded if you don't follow the specific formula that your mm-hmm. instructor has asked you to do.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, fourth
because
grade.
Because they're going by several different formulas on how to get that answer. And you can come up with different answers based on the formula that they told you to utilize. Mm-hmm. So that's also an issue as well. I have students that have taken, as a dean, I've had students that were basically failing calculus. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they're getting A's. Well, they're going online and getting AI to do it for them. Mm-hmm. They found out through the school year, where to go, because, you know, through word of mouth, they find out, well, this is the website you go to. They've turned around F's to A's and still don't know the work. So we have a lot of different things in play. That technology, as I said, I even have instructors who have gone back now because of that. And so, you know, work out the problem in front of me. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do it electronically. Work it out in front of me. Work it out in class. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way that they can ensure that they're getting what they need and even understand the process to get the answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you tell us the thought processes? Because I know people complained for years mm-hmm. that American students had lower math scores yes. than, say, Asian students.
Oh, yes.
So the adoption of Singapore math, or I forget mm-hmm. the other name for it, mm-hmm. for those who may not recognize the Singapore math mm-hmm. term, did it improve the test scores? Has it made a positive impact?
You know, in English and English history and some of the sciences still remain low across the board in the country. One of my topics was standardized testing and Common Core. And by mentioning Oregon, well, they've taken out the Common Core because they're like, well, look, you showed up. Thank you. Here's your diploma. You know, it's basically come down to that because of the teacher shortages and also just the access to instruction for students. Say, for instance, when you're talking about all the different levels, again, those are the most serious. I don't care what state you look at. Literally, we could sit together right now. History, sciences, and your Englishes are still remaining low across the board, meaning reading comprehension, your histories, and not necessarily the math, but the sciences have remained, I would say, at a constant low across the board. Mathematics is something that's universal, and it has improved across the board for all ethnicities and races. It has remained consistent, but the English, the sciences, and the histories have remained low simply because of the reading comprehension skills and the lack of analytic skills, or the decreased ability in the analytic skills, meaning how to understand a process. When we talk about history, people have a hard time making the connections. Like, say, for instance, okay, think about the issue of taking down statues, okay? And we talk about that. Why are we not teaching what history really was and what really happened? I had students that used to tell me and still tell me, like I said, even as a dean, they tell me, oh, I would have done something. No, you would not have. You're putting the context of today into a time frame in which it was impossible. You would not have. Or they look at movies with like Harriet Tubman, and they basically almost put a superhero cape on her in that movie. That would not have happened. It would not have happened. Most of the support that people were getting at that particular time was through monetary gain of a friend that may have been of another race to help them get to where they needed to be, meaning legal fees and things like that, or providing them with a place to stay. But our history is so convoluted. That's why it remains low, the English, the comprehension, the analytic skills, and those subjects. But mathematics has not improved. It's just remained consistent. That's it.
Well, you mentioned the teacher shortage. Can you tell us why that is? Because it seems like it's been going on, in my opinion, for decades. I know that they've had a lot of changes to allow people to sort of fast track a teaching career.
Yes.
Like for instance, that people switching over from one career to teaching.
Yeah, career switchers. Yes.
Right. And so they would, from what I've noticed, already be in the classroom teaching, earning their degrees and whatnot. So it seems to be much more acute now. So can you explain, you know, what's caused it and why it's gotten even worse than it already was?
Well, I'm going to tell you, there's several different factors. With teacher shortages, you can have I went to go visit principals. You can have a variety of factors. Number one is safety. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number one is safety. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about the changes from the time that, you know, say for instance, maybe when we were in school to the time I was teaching to the time now. Mm-hmm. If you think about the fact that, okay, I'll give you an example. Okay. When I was a young teacher, I had students, in my 20s, I had students who wanted to come home over the weekend. And I mean, I was teaching middle school and then high school. And they wanted to come home with me. And it wasn't anything weird, like, you know, all this stuff that you see today going on. It was the kids just, they didn't want to go home, or they just wanted to hang out, or they just wanted to be in another environment. You know, they saw you at, like, they saw me as a mother figure, not a big sister, but more of a mother figure. Mm-hmm. There were kids sometimes after school, they had to stay after, and I would give them a ride home. Mm-hmm. The parents trusted me, had a good rapport with them. They knew, you know, everything was on the up and up. And, you know, here I was just taking your kid home. Okay. I would not do it today. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't touch it. Wouldn't dare. We are living in different times. Say for instance, even with kids, the level of respect, was just different. Parents were more involved. It just was different. I mean, and for me, 15, 20 years ago, it was different. Everybody was more respectful. Now you have parents coming to the school threatening to fight teachers, and teachers saying, you want to fight me? I'm ready. So we are in a total different time, total different environment, total different things going on. This lack of support from the principal on down, the principals feel like they don't have the support. How in the world can they provide it to the teachers? Mm-hmm. So you have those issues, things that have changed. Say, for instance, you have students where if a child was not reading on level, you would retain them in the first, second, before the third grade to make sure that they were reading. Now we pass everybody along because as I stated about the language barriers, we don't dare hold anybody back. We pass you right on through. Can't read, can't write, can't speak the language. We pass you right on through. Mm-hmm. And that is what's changed. It is documented. It's not anything I'm saying by personal opinion. The principals even tell me, I mean, most recently, I mean, within days that I've spoken with people last week, they say, no, if I was to hold every parent accountable that was not even sending their child to school, I would stay in the court. Mm-hmm. And we know that we have laws on the books that state that after a certain amount of days, that you need to bring that forward and you need to, you know, follow suit with it. Nope. Mm-hmm. They don't do it. It's very rare that a child is even retained anymore in a grade. They are socially promoted. That is done. It is not anything I'm making up. It's not anything that I'm stating for opinion or just saying. It is documented. There are a lot of factors. The money. You still have teachers trying to work another job because after getting a master's degree, unless you are working in a school system that the federal government will help you pay back your student loans or forgive part of those student loans, you're still saddled with that debt. which is far beyond what a school system is going to pay you to even take a class to even get the next degree. So people are thinking, oh, well, you know, we've given teachers raises. They still are not to the national average. They're nowhere near it. So you have teachers stressed out. You have different conditions on the job. You don't have the support. You don't have the wherewithal. There are things there that people just do not want to discuss and don't want to even take into consideration. With a master's degree, you could be working anywhere else but teaching. You're not getting your best and brightest any longer. Not to say that we don't have some people that are excellent in the field, because I never want to say that, but you're not getting the same pool of applicants that you would have gotten, nor does the same pool of applicants even exist anymore because of the education they're getting. Mm-hmm. Meaning that if you have a poor education and then you go back to the schools, you're providing a little bit more than what you got. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be enough for the generations coming behind you. So there are a lot of things in play that were not in play 10, 15, 20 years ago in education.
You mentioned safety is part of the reasons why there's a teacher shortage. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yes, the conditions in general. Say, for instance, I mean, just being a director myself, and I mean, this was literally, and I tell people, early in my career, I was in my 20s. I had two parents pull up to the front. My office was right beside the principal's office. I was the director of programs. Pulled up, looked out a window. Two parents pulled up into the bus loop. Mind you, they should have pulled into the parking. So we knew something was funny when we saw them pull into the bus loop together and get out and start fighting. Well, the father went, proceeded to go back to his truck and pull out a gun out in the bus loop. Mother's standing there still going back and forth. They're still arguing, shot fired. The father actually had the custody of the child. The mother didn't. They try to bring it inside the building. But now you have an issue where you cannot get into the school buildings. You do have to press a buzzer to get in access to a school building. But even with children bringing weapons to school because of the bullying aspect, you think about in Virginia, you all look up the case. A six-year-old brought a gun to school, and his bag should have been checked, but it fell through where the bag was not checked properly. And this six-year-old shot his teacher.
Right.
Luckily, she's here to tell the story. But a six-year-old brought a gun, a fully charged gun to school. You have children bringing weapons. We don't have the security measures in each of the schools. Parents are not knowledgeable. And they say, well, my child, I don't want my child in a prison. And it's like, your child is not in a prison, but while other children are coming that are bringing weapons on a daily basis, you would want that protection. So we don't have enough security officers and security SROs, meaning security resource officers and security personnel are two different things altogether, and people get them confused. SROs are there to provide security to a school, meaning that if a kid comes and says, Johnny has a gun, Betty has a knife, then they take measures to take care of that. And you never know anything about it. Security officers are there to actually to work with the students. They, you know, they're going through the metal detectors, you know, any issues that come up, you know, really keeping the school safe. There are two different things. Once again, we don't have the personnel to even cover that in all the schools. Let's go back to the fact of why. Reading and writing skills. We don't even have enough personnel to staff the police anymore, the firefighters, emergency personnel, teachers, social workers, school nurses, or social workers. Let's go back one more again. Wonder why that is? Because people don't have the reading and writing skills anymore because of lack of education to get those jobs.
So
it's a big circle when you ask when people always ask me one question, it then lends itself to a big circle that is not just a one answer, you know, a simple answer. There is a reason as to why it's a ripple effect, as it were.
So what do you think needs to be changed on either the teacher side or from the who are the people over the who No, not, well, I guess it would be the government, but like what steps do you think that we as a society need to take in order to ensure that our schools are safe, that our schools are teaching the necessary, skills and standards so that we are able to better protect our schools?
Accountability. That's what's happened. We look at the fact of, if I can go back a little bit, we look at accountability overall. We think about during the George Floyd riots, where we had people where I went to court one day. I had to go to court to just check over some papers. Someone asked me just to go look at some documents in the deeds office. I mean, not going in there for a case. Mm-hmm. And I pull up front. And I said, oh, I got a good space. You know, I pulled right up front. Mm-hmm. So oblivious that I pulled up right up front in front of the court building in Kapark that day. Mm-hmm. The windows were busted out of the court building. The deputy sheriff said, yes, ma'am, come on in. He said, I'm in here. Another person said, he said, you won't be able to go to the records room today because we're closed. And I'm so oblivious. I'm not looking at the graffiti. I'm not looking at the busted windows. I'm looking at, oh, I got a good parking space out front. Mm-hmm. And so we then think about that, and we think about all the things that went along with that. Do you know how many cases were dropped because of that? Do you know how many people got off on crimes that they should have been convicted of during that time frame? Do you know how long the courts were closed? I mean, we have no accountability whatsoever. Back to the standpoint of students who can't read. That's what's different. I was retained in the first grade because I could not read. I knew I couldn't read. I was five. I knew I couldn't read. Mm-hmm. It's not shameful. We try to act like kids don't know what's going on. I knew I couldn't read. Mm-hmm. I'm dyslexic. I knew I couldn't read. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I learned to read before I finished the first grade. But I was retained in the first grade. So when you have a winter birthday, meaning my birthday is in March, you would be 19 trying to finish if somebody retained you. But by the time I got to high school, I took summer school. I went to summer school every year and made up the difference and still graduated on time. Mm. But today that's unheard of. People would think something is wrong with you if you say that you were retained in a grade. They would say, ooh, you know, whoops, slow, you know. No, that was the norm. I know people who are CEOs today that were retained in a grade during my time frame, but it's so rare to hear anybody say that either you had some serious malfunctions this day and age to be retained in a grade. I mean, some serious malfunctions. We don't do it anymore. That's number one, accountability. We've got students that are graduating that are with a 0.1 GPA, not a one, not a D, but below an F. Mm-hmm. Meaning they just sat there. And we then wonder why we say we have nobody to fill these positions. I talked to the police chief. I talked to the fire chief. And they said, I want to show you something. They showed me a picture of a graduating class, maybe 2015, 14. Mm-hmm. You got 30 folks standing there in the picture, you know, graduating class. Mm-hmm. He showed me one from 2002, I mean, excuse me, 2022. They had seven folks for the fire chief. Seven. Mm-hmm. He went from 30 something in 2014, 15 to seven folks. Basically, we'll say 10 years later. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll say 10, it's not almost 10, but we'll say 10 years later. Well, 10 this year, mm-hmm. but we'll say you got seven folks. So that's the problem. I asked them, I said, well, what is going on? People can't pass a test. People don't want to come. If they can't pass a physical exam, think about, did you take a regular PE class, or did they say to you, you can do it at a gym on your own, or you can do some of it on your own? Did you actually take a PE class? Did you all take a PE class?
It was, it wasn't more like a PE class. It was more like a health and wellness.
So you took health and wellness, but did they make you take all of it? Like, did you do gym stuff? Meaning, were you in a physical gym at your school, or did they say, quote, you can do some of this on your own?
I mean, we went to the gym. It's not like we actually, you know, did stuff in there, but I mean, we went to the building.
So you went to the building, but I'm saying, was it like the old fashioned, like, you know, like you see the gym teacher with the whistle and you're doing activities?
No, not at all.
Exactly. And that's the difference again. That's the difference again. For example, my niece, okay? My niece is now in her very early 20s. I mean, like 21, you know, 21, 22 this year, okay? I remember when she came to us, her mother and I and her dad, and then she was telling me about how, oh yeah, they said if I go to the gym with my parents that I can sign off on this. And I said, what? You're not even doing the gym? You're not even tech? And she said, yeah, if I do such and such, you know, and I go to the gym with them like a couple of evenings, then I could, and I was like, are you serious? I mean, that's the difference. Think about, do you have full-fledged music classes? Do you all have them? Full-fledged music and art?
Well, we have an art class. I don't take it, but our music, we recently just got a new teacher because our other teacher that we had last semester was fired, and we had, I think we went a whole semester without a music teacher.
That's my point. But now it even makes it worse that most of the programs in your public schools have been cut, even some private schools, because the first thing to go is always your art and your music. And that's where your creativity is. Those are the first to go. Or they have what is called an itinerant music or art teacher. Itinerant means, okay, I'm your art teacher. I got to go to four schools today. You know, like the whole week, I've got five schools. So you're one of my schools. You know, you don't have the number of art teachers or music teachers anymore. Even though they are graduating them, you don't have them. So the itinerant, meaning that that person runs from school to school to school, because that's the first thing cut. So that is the difference in between now, 15 years ago. That's the difference, meaning that you had art in schools, you had music in schools. What about shop? Do you take a shop class or a mechanical drawing class? No.
I have shop, not at all.
Do you take a type of consumer science course, more or less like a, what we used to call home economics, but now it's consumer science. Mm-mm. That's my point. That's what has changed. That's why I said people that are older, meaning anyone in their 30s, 40s, and 50s got all of that. They got the art teacher. They got the music teacher. They got the home ec teacher. They got the shop teacher. They even got the mechanical drawing teacher. I had all of those. You all do not. That's the difference. And so when I try to talk to young people and tell them what you think, a lot of young people are hung up on this. Oh, I got it together. Oh, no, you don't. I still don't have it together. You certainly don't have it together. And so that's why we try to explain what used to exist, meaning a full-fledged plate of education. You all are getting the scraps. That's what's going on. And it's just this whole process of less education to control society. And I know that sounds weird, but in fact, it really is a thing. Meaning that when you have a society that has less education, thus they're easier to control because they don't understand what process to go through to get that knowledge. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are. People are at some of the lowest points today because they don't have the access or the understanding because they're not exposed to it.
Well, that said, I mean, what about, it sounds to me like they're taking it even a step further in places like Florida where
yes.
We're just changing education altogether, basically changing history to make it say what we want it to say instead of what it actually
exactly.
is. Is that another and method of control?
Yeah, and that's what my point is about controlling the masses, meaning that when you create a narrative and you create a false history and students don't understand it, like somebody showed a book the other day, I was looking, it was on like social media, and they were saying about, oh, this was a good book. And I said, you know, I remember reading that book at my home about facts about, it says 100 facts of the Negro. And I read it when I was in elementary school because the reading level was, you know, was basically a fifth grade reading level, even though it was basically for adults. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading that at home because I always had good access to books. Mm-hmm. I remember by the time I got to high school and my government teacher, we were talking about just different people in history, like different leaders. And I asked him something about Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. Cause you know, it was a variety of people we learned about, mm-hmm. but it wasn't like, it was just surface level. I mean, very bare bones. Mm-hmm. And I went to predominantly white schools. It was just very bare bones. And so he says, I want you to don't tell. I don't want to fill your head with what this person did and what this person did. I want you to investigate it. I want you to research it. And so I read about Malcolm X and I read about Martin Luther King. And I came back with the fact that I like Malcolm X far more than Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. Simply because of who he was. I'm not advocating that. I'm saying that when I tell others, no matter what your age range is, don't take anybody's word for anything. Study it on your own. Mm-hmm. Read and find out about these people in history. Understand why they made the decisions that they did. Understand them as a human being. I tell people, like say for instance, I have students who pledge the same sorority as I did. And I said, I am a human being. Mm-hmm. I am a person. You know, you may look up to me because I've done a few, you know, this, that, or the other. But no, I'm a person. Well, and I tell people, J. Cole was one of my students at Fayetteville State University. He used to come and sit on my sofa in my office on days that I was like, look, I got to leave. I got to go to another building. I said, close the door when you leave. It got to that point. I tell people, people are human beings. I did an internship under Douglas Wilder, who was the first African-American governor in the United States. He's a person. Mm-hmm. We're people. But you've got to study the person. Don't take anyone's word for whoever's being presented to you. Learn your real history. Do not allow someone to construct it for you. And that's like you said, that back to the Florida point. You cannot allow that to happen. You need to study it on your own. But sometimes we're so satisfied with what someone gives us that we go along with it. I say never do that. Never trust what someone's telling you. Always investigate it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I want to get people understanding that you have to do that in order to gain the knowledge necessary to be able to be a productive citizen. Mm-hmm.
I agree with all of it. I truly do think that they are using the education or the lack of knowledge as a way to control the narrative, especially Mr. DeSantis and the people that are complicit along with him in Florida.
I think it's ignorance. I mean, I think when I see a lot of that and I tell people, look up my last name, Behringer, and look at the narrative. All of it's been taken down. Everything with Behringer as the last name in North Carolina and Virginia was taken down. But if you really dig deep, I could give you some history on it. Mm-hmm. And explain to you that it was also just different situations in that as to why that one of the people was so angry and wrote things called, one of them wrote, quote, the Negro problem in the early, I'm trying to think, 19th century. Mm-hmm. And the reason was his brother was with a black woman and so was his father. And he hated the fact that the two of them left everything to those two individuals. So he wrote a book called The Negro Problem. But nobody investigated the fact that the Behringers are mostly African American today. They didn't own slaves. So it's just a lot of, like I said, convoluted history that people don't understand. And then they mix it with, oh, this wasn't that bad. No, this wasn't that bad. And you're like, wait a minute. We need to know real history. And so I think a lot of times it's ignorance, and sometimes people just do not want to, they're nervous about topics. Mm-hmm. And so they sugarcoat them and they try to cover a lot of things that are there. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always one to say, no, let's talk about it. Let's discuss and understand what really, you know, what things really existed and how they existed and what we can do today, you know, to get people to understand that process.
Well, what do you think the solution is? We talked about a lot of the problems. What are some solutions?
Well, you know, I want people to be honest. Like I said, again, mm-hmm. accountability and being honest. But we're not ready for that. we're not ready to attack the, like I said, we've got to attack the problem so that we can have the accountability. People do not want to attack the problems to have the solutions. My thing is always truthfully to have been proactive. Even as an educator, as an administrator, I try to be proactive, meaning addressing an issue before it becomes an issue. And I often find that we have a lot of difficulties because someone has not been truthful in what they need to be. And then also to help people discover the truth so that we can address those issues and make amends. But like I said, again, it just depends. Like I said, with the reading and writing, we have gotten to the point that we're allowing anything. We're allowing students just to graduate with nothing because we don't want to speak up and say, this is becoming more of a problem. People don't want the problems. People just don't want the issues. The only time I think that someone is really getting the education that they need is because your parents have the right last name or they are connected. And I know that's weird to say that, but the only time you're actually listened to is if you're someone who is someone who is a parent who they know knows better. And that is the truth. If they know that you know better or you're connected in the community, or that you have, you know, some kind of kinship to the school or the teacher themselves, you're not getting heard. You're not going to get the same level of support as that child who is falling through the cracks. You're just not going to. And people don't want to hear it. They don't want to discuss it. They want to say that everybody's on an even playing field. They're not. And until we really begin looking at that and really giving everyone what they need, as far as education goes and being very fair, which is difficult to be fair, but be treating everyone the same regardless of your socioeconomic status, race, ethnicity, and just all of those factors, we're not going to be truthful with what children are being provided with and schools in general.
When do you think society will be ready to be honest and to be accountable, especially when it, you know, in the school systems and whatnot?
You know, I am always hopeful that things will turn around and people will do the right thing. My thing is, I tell people, I don't really care what anybody is. I got a lot of people asking me. As you know, I recently ran for school board. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of people asking me during that time frame, what would I do for this group? What would I do for that group? And I would look puzzled. Educate. You know, my thing is, I don't care what you are, who you are. I want to educate you. Mm-hmm. I had people coming to me about sexual orientation. I had people coming to me about race. I had people coming to me about where they live. I mean, I don't care. I want to educate you. I want you to get the supports necessary that so you're a productive citizen, so that you can go out here and be self-sufficient, self-reliant. People didn't want to hear that. They want to say, what are you going to do for this group? What are you going to do for that group? And people fail to realize it's not about that. It's about the total education of all. Mm. So once we finally get to the separatism and we say, look, we need to educate all children to the best of our ability. I tell people, even with the Brown versus the Board of Education, every statute law that's put in place, you don't see it really being fully in effect for the next 20 to 25 years. And I'm going to explain that. Again, Brown versus the Board of Education was around 1954, 55. Okay. Mm-hmm. My mother, who would be 84, was a 16-year-old person, junior, you know, a junior in high school. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she would have been the grouping that would have been directly affected by Brown versus the board. Mm-hmm. Well, in Chesterfield County, they didn't close the schools. So my mother was able to finish high school at an all black school in the county to not upset the apple cart. Well, if you take that 25 years, you're then in my generation. And in my generation, we were the first generation go to schools that were fully integrated in the South. 25 years later, if you think about it, meaning 25 years from 1955 to 1975 is when 1975-76 school year is when I began kindergarten. So if you think about someone who started school 20 years or so after Brown versus the Board, that was the first generation to go to the predominantly, I mean, to schools that were fully integrated or complete school through a fully integrated system 20 years later. Okay. Right. So then you think about all the issues now. Even if we put something in place, it wouldn't be in a life. It wouldn't even be for the kids that you're enacting it for. Mm-hmm. It would be for the next generation or generations behind them. So it's like I said, when I tell people this, they become discouraged. We just have to keep plugging along and saying, educate all, not just a segment, not just a grouping, but make sure that all children are treated fairly, regardless of socioeconomic status, regardless of their background, their ethnicity or their race or their educational attainment at that particular time. Say, for instance, if you have a child, again, who is, what do we talk about now? Prison to pipeline. Do you all know about that?
No, ma'am.
Okay, prison to pipeline is if a child is not reading by the third grade, that is a predictor of how many prisons will be built in their area. It is truth. It is real. It is not anything made up. People don't talk about it. Prison to pipeline means, especially for Black males, it is a predictor of how many Black males in your schools, private, public, or otherwise, not reading by the third grade is called prison to pipeline. So when you look, okay, if whatever state you're in Virginia, it's called Virginia SOLs, meaning standards of learning. Mm-hmm. So if you look at our standards of learning and then you can predict how many children are not reading by the third grade, that is a predictor of how many will be in the prison system after they get old enough, quote, to go into the prison system. That is a predictor of how many prisons will be built based on non-reading levels by the third grade. Why do you think that people try to hush that up and push them through? Because no one is retained. So if you can't read, you just can't read, and we really don't talk about it, we push you on through. Because we don't want anyone to see the numbers of students that really are not reading by a third grade level. We have high school students that are not even reading on a third grade level, graduating, going across the stage with cap and gown on. But we don't want to say, oh, well, we didn't graduate some from this group. We didn't graduate some from that group. So we pass everybody through regardless of ability level. But where, again, it shows up is what? College. Meaning that, okay, I told you you graduated from high school, gave you a diploma. What is the next thing you're going to do? Either you're going to do what? Military, a business, or what? College. Most of the time, those are the big three. But I told you, you graduated from high school, fine, no problem, right? Then you go to that college and you think you're good and ready for what? College courses. Because I said you passed high school. You are now finding yourself that you can't even pass the basic courses at the college. So they put you in what? Remedial. They don't even call it remedial anymore. They call it supplemental instruction, meaning the basic courses, very basic. You know, like almost elementary level, but they say college. So they put you in those courses and you have to play catch up by taking all these supplemental instruction courses before you even get to the real meat of, quote, the college courses. Most of the time people will drop out. They will not even get to the college courses. When they have to take all the supplemental just to get where they need to be because they're reading on a lower level, they're not even college ready, they will drop out. They don't mind taking your money. But they normally will drop out and come back maybe when they've gotten those skills years later. You may not qualify for the military because you can't pass certain tests. And you sure can't do the trade because you can't follow directions. So what's left for you? Nothing. What's left for you if you can't do those things normally?
Just the regular work.
And I'm asking the judge. Normally,
just what's the regular work for
those things? Huh?
That's just basically entering the regular workforce, sounds like.
Workforce, but McDonald's. If you can't do the regular workforce and you can't follow directions, what else is out there for you?
Well, it sounds to me like it's the jobs that nobody would want.
Jobs nobody would want, but who are taking those?
Nobody, because they don't want them.
Well, the immigrants that are coming to this country.
No.
So we're back in that, I don't have a job. What am I left to do? Mm. Think about the worst case scenario. What am I left to do?
Sell drugs again.
No, they don't.
Illegal activity. Illegal activity. So I didn't get you in the third grade because number one, we don't put children, we don't incarcerate then. But prison mm-hmm. pipeline again was what? You couldn't read, but on a what grade level? Third grade level. Mm-hmm. So again, you couldn't get that job when you finished the high school because we said that you were ready to go. You passed high school, right? But you really mm-hmm. couldn't read and write. Mm-hmm. No job, no opportunities, mm-hmm. low skill level, mm-hmm. can't get a job because the competition is too great even for the lower level jobs. So all I can do is what? Some illegal activity. And that lends itself where? Pipeline. Mm-hmm. And then we wonder, and this is what's going on. Recidivism rates are high. This is what's going on. Most of the people who have committed various crimes or repeat offenders, because it's a cycle, can't get out of the cycle.
I hate to end it on this note, but
it's just, I wish we could have skipped it, but like I said, again, that's the prison pipeline. Look it up and it will tell you third grade reading scores. Mm-hmm. There's a correlation between the two, and that's what actually is being utilized today.
Well, how do people get in touch with you, follow you on social media?
Certainly. They can contact me through my email address, which is going to be charletta.berringer.phd@gmail. Or they can go to my Facebook and find me as Charletta Berringer Brown on Facebook.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brown, for being here.
Certainly. A pleasure as always.
You got three takeaways.
Yeah, learn to read by third grade.
Right.
Go ahead.
Okay, read, do math, and stay in school.
Yes.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Brown, for being here. I'm sorry. Dr. Brown. Thank you, Dr. Brown, for being here.
Thank you.
We hope we can have you on again.
Certainly. I really appreciate it. I'm going to try to hone it in because, like I said, again, this is a topic that I'm very passionate about, and I thank you all for having me again and look forward to speaking with you all again.
Well, I hope you please don't horn it in. Keep going.
I know. I'm trying to. Mr. Brown, it's difficult.
I know.
They get me going.
Hey, you know, thank you so much, and I'm sure the young men will have you back. And I understand that you're going to make an appearance on Ann's show one Tuesday.
Yes, I am.
That'll be absolutely great. No, we need to have you back, and we need to have more people speak out like you because people don't talk about these things. And if you don't talk about it, it's a good chance things won't happen, right?
Exactly.
AJ, Alex, Dr. Brown, excellent broadcast. Thank you so much.
Enjoy
your Saturday, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see. We've got one song going out. I think the gentleman sent this one also. This is Mars 3, Breathe Slow.
Breathe freely and effortlessly. Let the air ease gently out of the body. Letting the feeling of weight and effort drain out of the body as you exhale.